Welcome to Home Ground. I'm Brian Kahn. We live in a consumer culture where we and our children are told every day that the quality of our lives depends on what we buy, own, drink, or drive. The overarching reference point is you or me as separate individuals. Coexisting with the consumer is another idea, the group, the team, the community. We see that most visibly in athletics and in the military. Two former Navy SEALs, Anthony Page and Jason Larson, are, among other things, going around the country talking to high school kids about the latter: teamwork, communication, leadership, and the dynamics of elite teams. Why would they do that? Jason and Anthony, many thanks for joining us on Home Ground. Jason, where'd you grow up? What'd your folks do?
I was born in the Philippines. My father worked for the State Department. My mother was an economist in Manila. They met in the Philippines. I was born there, and about 2 months later moved to Virginia, and that's where I grew up.
Rural or urban?
Now it's becoming more urban, but rural at the time.
High school?
I went to high school in Virginia. Went to college in Virginia.
Studied what?
I studied finance and Chinese.
Interesting combination. Why either one?
I knew that when I went to college, I wanted to learn a language that was much different from English. So I decided at the time that it would either be Chinese or Arabic. And this was in the early 90s, so neither of those languages were really at the forefront then yet. Everyone was still trying to learn Japanese back then. And when I got to college, of those two languages, the only one that was offered was Chinese.
Before you left for college, what central values did you learn from growing up in the family in which you grew up in that were still important to you?
That's a good question. I think that I'm pretty lucky that I was born to pretty great parents. And the thing that I'm most grateful for, I think, is that they taught me to have curiosity about the world. Both of my parents spent a lot of time when they were young traveling to different parts of the world. And I decided that when I grew up, I wanted to do the same thing. And so some of the key things I did in my life involved that, and I have them to thank for it.
Anthony, same question. Where'd you grow up? What'd your folks do?
Grew up in the farmlands of Pennsylvania. My mother was into nursing, home care nursing. And my father started off in working blue-collar jobs, and then both of them turned to hospitality.
College?
Right out of high school, no. I got all my college finished up while I was in the service. Joined the Navy right out of high school. And then through the years, my 10 years in the military, got a degree in exercise science.
Same question I asked your colleague here. When you left high school, what were the most important values you picked up in your family that still matter to you?
Yeah, I think I was, just like Jason, I was lucky enough to have a great family. The single most thing that usually stands out when people ask me that question is both my parents taught me that, setting a goal and doing everything to achieve that goal, but at the same time, not missing focus on people that help you reach that goal. So kind of paying back to the people that have helped you along the way and not forgetting that you didn't do this alone, that it took a team to get to where you were at.
Why the military for you?
I personally didn't think I was ready to go to college. I probably would have wasted both my time and my parents' money if I went to college right out of high school. Fortunately, I had the support of my parents, or I should say at the time, and my dad and my mom wanted me to go the college route just out of fear of what I was getting into, trying to be a SEAL. But I wanted to do something different. A lot of my fellow students were going off to college or going right into the job market. So I wanted to do something a little bit different than everyone else was doing.
So you join the Navy. How do you end up as a SEAL?
Trying to do something that everyone else wasn't doing. I wanted to go against the grain, so to speak, and people were, whether they were going off to college or joining the workforce, I wanted to do something that the typical person in my position wasn't going to do.
Where did that come from, that wanting to do something different?
Not really sure. that's a good question. I had a great group of friends, a great family, as I mentioned earlier, and probably just the curiosity of doing something that the typical person wasn't. I was always one to not to follow people, want to do something different, want to be a leader, so to speak. So I think that was part of the ambition.
When you joined the Navy, did you join specifically to be a SEAL?
Yes, sir.
Okay, then what was your perception of the SEALs that you wanted to join?
I think it was the ability that not everyone, it wasn't an easy task to begin with. Not everyone was that signed up for that job or that adventure, as some of us call it, was going to be able to succeed at that. And that that obstacle, those obstacles to overcome was something that sparked my interest.
And Jason, what led you to want to become a SEAL? You were in college, or did you graduate before you made the decision? Tell us.
I actually didn't even think about the SEALs till fairly late in life. So I graduated from college. I went straight into the workforce, and I was an investment banker in New York for about 5 years. And it was not until, you know, probably my fourth year in, I started to think about the military. It was never really an option in my family growing up. It just wasn't presented. And I grew up during peacetime, and I never really thought about it. I never really thought there was a need. And so I was working in New York and knew I wanted to get out of Wall Street and was trying to think of some other things to do. And that was right around the time 9/11 happened. And so, you know, kind of watching the airplanes fly into the buildings, and suddenly the world changed, right? And troops were going overseas, and we had all these wars kicking off. And I hadn't seen anything like that in my lifetime. And I felt like I was fortunate to have had all the opportunities I had growing up in America, and that at that point it was time for me to give back.
You're listening to Home Ground, and I'm Brian Kahn. We're talking with Anthony Page and Jason Larson, co-founders of Applied Performance Sciences. How old were you when you made that decision to shift from investment banking to the Navy SEALs?
I was 27.
What was the world of investment banking like for you, in summary?
It was stressful. It was a busy time to be on Wall Street. This was sort of 99 to 2003, and it was the first dot-com bubble. There was a lot going on in the capital markets. So it was a busy time. It was a stressful time, and I found I learned a lot, but was ready to get out of there.
You said you decided you wanted to give back. Why the SEALs?
Well, it was originally I was looking at other government opportunities and was looking at some State Department things and intelligence agencies, and I had always sort of had a fascination with the SEAL teams, but I never really thought of it as something that you actually do. And of course, I thought I was too old at the time. I thought you had to have previous military experience, and I researched it one day and found out that I was right at the age limit. 27 was the cutoff to get a contract.
Did you have previous athletic experience?
I played sports growing up. I wasn't particularly good at any of them, but I was always active and enjoyed them.
Anthony, I meant to ask you the same question. Did you have previous athletic experience? And the reason I ask is the SEALs are known as, among other things, fit.
I think same with Jason. I played sports all throughout my young life, but never really excelled to the point of pursuing it in college or as a career.
Anthony, back to you. When you visualized going against the grain and joining the SEALs, what did you think you were joining? What was your expectation of your experience?
At the point when I joined, we had there was probably only a handful of books out, maybe a movie or two, you know, the Charlie Sheen movie, Navy SEALs, that definitely doesn't depict being a SEAL. So I had kind of a mixed review about it. And then I didn't read or look too much into it because I didn't want to. One, I was scared to know what I was getting myself into. So I allowed things to just come as, you know, handle them as they came. But I expected to do things that a lot of people wouldn't know about, things that could possibly put myself in danger and the people that I'm working with. So I wasn't really sure what I was getting myself into, but I knew enough that it was something that, you know, piqued my interest that I wanted to be part of.
Same question to you, Jason. What did you think you were getting into?
What I wanted from the SEAL teams was, you know, I was looking for, in that geopolitical environment, what would be the most impactful way that I individually could serve.
And that sounds like a political assessment. I'm defining that in broad terms.
So what could I do on my own that would have the most impact for the effort. And so what I mean is I looked at joining the Foreign Service or the State Department, and I got the sense from that that I'd be some small part of some large machine. And when I looked at the SEAL teams, it seemed to me that I could go there, I could put in my effort, and that, you know, pound for pound, the effort that I put in would have a greater amount of impact.
How long were you a SEAL?
I was in for 7 years.
All right. And did it meet your expectations, broadly speaking?
It did. It did. I got to go to a lot of places, see a lot of things, and meet a lot of people that I would never have been exposed to. So, I mean, it really gave me a special sort of education that I don't think you can get anywhere else.
All right. What about the impact? You went in to have impact.
I've never really thought about that since I got out. I think that maybe not as much as I would have hoped, but I still think more than I would have had if I had taken any of the other routes that I was looking for.
Back to you, Anthony. Same question in terms of you were looking for something that seems unorthodox. How long were you in?
I was in for about 10 years active duty.
All right. Looking back at the experience, how would you summarize it? Degree of positive, negative, and specifically what you learned you didn't know going in?
Without a doubt, it was a positive experience. And physically, if I could go back and do it again, I would. I wouldn't change the courses that I've taken. As far as the impact, as Jason said, you really don't think about that when you're doing it or even when you get out. It's just something that is ingrained in us that we're doing this for a greater cause, and it's not something that we do to check a box for ourselves, so to speak, or, you know, to kind of make a list of things of what you did right or how you impacted certain people. But overall, it was a positive experience. I matured quicker than most 18-year-old kids in my position would have. So it's definitely set me up for success, you know, for years later.
So you're saying 18 to then 28 approximately was your tenure?
Exactly.
Jason, you anticipated and hoped for impact in the aftermath of 9/11. 9/11 was an attack on the United States. When one goes into the military in a time of conflict, and I would say, and correct me if you disagree, if you want to become a SEAL, you face the potential of killing people. Fair?
I'd say that's fair.
Okay. Did you think about that? And if so, in what context? How did that strike you? Because in general, civilized society, killing people is something we don't want to do. When we're attacked, we take a different attitude, perhaps. What was your thinking about it?
It's something I gave a lot of thought to. And I think that in that context, you've got to get comfortable with it. And I think there are different ways of approaching that. For me, I think there are times when you've got to be ready to kill someone, and you've got to make that decision whether that's, you know, when you're faced with that decision, it's yours to make. And what you have to decide in that moment is how you're going to be able to live with that. And if that's the person, if that person needs to be killed or if they don't. And it's something that everyone in their own way has to get comfortable with. And I was comfortable with doing that.
Anthony, same question.
The initial thought of it, and this sort of shows the lack of maturity when I first joined and wanted to be a SEAL, was I honestly didn't think about that part of it. I thought about all the cool things that, you know, you saw, you read in books or saw in movies. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't till probably the moment I checked into my SEAL team in Virginia Beach that it, you know, talking to people, and I checked in at a time when guys were just coming back from deployment, you know, coming back from a rotation, and, you know, hearing stories and, you know, listening to, you know, situations that they've been in where it really struck a chord, and where I went home, and I remember the specific time I went home and thought about the positions that I'm going to be in and what I'm about to do and where I'm about to go and the sacrifices I'm going to have to make. And it came down to, if it's a difference between myself or my brothers getting home, then it's something that I'm comfortable and willing to do and something that I'll be able to live with and not have to look back and second guess myself.
So let me ask you both, starting with Anthony. You have a normal upbringing. You're going into an organization where at least the public perception is intensive teamwork training, intense physical development and discipline. It's a different kind of social group, to put it that way. True or false, and how did you react to it as a human being?
True. It's a very different group of individuals and a culture. And how I acted to that, I didn't really have much to compare it to. I was on sports teams, as I mentioned, and I was always part of, I always had a job in high school, so I always had to work with people. But the caliber of people that you work with, you have this bond that everyone's been through the selection course, everyone's been through different struggles, so you automatically are all in the same field. You know what each other's gone through. And the biggest part of that is you don't want to let anyone down. You don't want to disappoint people, and because disappointment usually, unfortunately, costs people lives.
Let me just jump in and ask you. You see, you don't want to let anybody down. You know, in general terms, I don't want to let people down. But I'm hearing it from you in a more intense way, that it's a serious thing, the idea of letting one of your colleagues down. Where does that feeling come from? In other words, I'm assuming you didn't have it as strongly when you walked in the door as when you walked out the door, fair?
Correct.
Where does it come from, that feeling?
It comes from the sacrifices that everyone makes to get there. Whether the sacrifice is staying up for a week, going through Hell Week, the selection course, or, you know, getting married and, you know, the next week you don't have time to, you know, go on a honeymoon because you're deploying, or you don't get to see the birth of your first child. Those are all sacrifices that the guys have made, and I'm not going to allow that person to look back and regret the sacrifice that he's made by letting him down by missing failure.
Same question to you, Jason. The strength of the feeling of not letting people down, was that part of your experience? And if so, the origin for you?
Yeah, that's definitely part of the experience. And it's, you know, the community is a very special place, and it's kind of hard to explain. And, you know, it all sort of starts when we go through training. And I think what really drives it is there is an obsession within the community with being the best. And it doesn't matter what we're doing, it seems like anything we're doing turns into a competition between each other. And we kind of have fun with it. But, you know, we want to be the best. We don't like to lose. And we go to great lengths to be the best at everything we try to do. And I've never been part of a group or seen a group that is that obsessed with perfection and just being the best. And it doesn't matter. You know, we have a joke. If one guy starts throwing rocks at a stop sign, within about 30 seconds, you're going to have 15 SEALs all throwing rocks at a stop sign, trying to be the first one to hit it. And, you know, it doesn't matter what we're doing. There's just this culture of always being the best, and that's the driving force.
You're listening to Home Ground, and I'm Brian Kahn. We're talking with two former Navy SEALs about their experience in the force and what they've learned from it and are doing with it. Jason, what is Applied Performance Sciences?
So Applied Performance Sciences is an effort that we started after getting out of the Navy or switching over to the reserves. And I kind of shifted back to the corporate world. And what I found and what a lot of us find is that when we get out there, it's just not the same, and we miss the caliber of person that we're used to working with. We miss being surrounded by a team of people who we know we can always count on, who are always going to try to do their best. And so a few of us kind of got together and said, really, we want to work with SEALs. And what we knew how to do was perform and teach people to perform. And so we started APS in order to help individuals or groups of people, organizations, improve their performance, whether that's physical performance, mental performance, or performance as an organization.
All right. That's a mouthful in the sense of people, individuals, groups, different types of performance. There's a built-in assumption that your experience as SEALs and pursuing excellence as SEALs and the techniques that you used and experienced is relevant to our broad commercial, academic, etc. world. Fair?
I'd say that's fair.
Because otherwise, why would you be specially qualified to teach? In summary, what are those qualities that can enhance substantially people's or team's performance?
Well, there's sort of a broad spectrum, and and it's intentionally broad, the areas that we target. So it might be anything from physical performance, right, an individual athlete, and it could be developing a human performance plan that is training, physical training, programming, nutrition, sleep plans, all the physiological things that can impact performance. And on the other end of the spectrum, we might work with a corporation. And so the things that come to bear there are sort of organizational behaviors. How can people work together to perform at a high level? And it comes down to a lot of those values, you know, always trying to be the best, always depending on each other, not wanting to let each other down. And how are those values instilled in us, and how can we instill them in other people?
Anthony, can you give me a concrete example of that?
Yeah, one of the biggest things which brings us here today is working with schools and athletic teams in the schools, student athletes. And it's basically, you know, Life of an Athlete, which is a program that we pinpoint, we go to schools, and we're working with schools on developing those leaders. And schools that have this program in place, such as Cody, Wyoming specifically, is a model school of ours that they've had this program in place and over the past, you know, plus 6 years, and their alcohol and substance abuse has decreased. Their athletic performance has increased. I think this past year they have four or five state championships in various sports in various organizations. And the kids own it. They turn it into something of their own. It is a completely student-run program, which teaches them leadership, which teaches them teamwork, team cohesion, and working with one another with a common goal in mind.
Jason, we don't have a lot of time. Can you give me a succinct summary of the background of this aspect of your activities, the Life of an Athlete? What's its origin?
One of the things we do is we partner with the Life of an Athlete program, which was developed by a gentleman named John Underwood. And the idea behind Life of an Athlete is John's a former Olympic coach and long-standing, well-known sports scientist. And he started to look at the impacts on human performance of lifestyle choices. And specifically, he spends a lot of time talking about alcohol use, drug use, stress management, sleep management. His passion is coaching kids. And he saw a need at the high school age to educate kids on these issues.
What I don't understand is that sort of standard operating procedure to me. Mm-hmm. In other words, we have anti-drug programs. We tell kids it's bad for them. What's the connection between him and you guys? What's your role?
So the way we met John is he came in several years back when we were in the SEAL team still, and he and another couple guys developed the human performance program for the SEAL teams. And it's based on the same concepts that are used in Life of an Athlete. Huh. So that's where we were first exposed to this information. And he came in and they set up studies and they poked us and prodded us and drew blood and tracked hormone levels and strength levels and did all these things to understand how we were performing. And John came in and he gave us a talk about probably 8 years ago now. And he came in and he presented on the effects of drinking alcohol.
As SEALs now.
As SEALs.
He's talking to SEALs, not high school athletes.
Right. You know, a lot of us were hearing that information for the first time in our lives. And when we started using his concepts, you know, a lot of us found, I personally found that, you know, for me, by that time, I was 35 years old and I had been an athlete and a SEAL. And at age 35, when I adopted these things, I found that I immediately became the strongest, fastest, most powerful, most athletic I had been in my life.
High schoolers are talked to all the time about don't do drugs and don't drink. What's different hearing it from you guys?
The difference that we bring to the table is we show them the science, the studies that demonstrates and is given to them that this is what it does to you. This is how it will affect your performance, whether it's your explosive performance, your mental performance on being an athlete and how important it is. So making those right choices, this is how it's going to affect your playing time.
Teaching or encouraging kids not to do drugs and drink is one thing. Your literature says you teach teamwork, communication, leadership, and the dynamics of elite teams. That's more complicated. How do you do that?
All that stuff is kind of wrapped up into one package. So it's all related. You can't do the the latter of those things you mentioned unless you have a handle on the former, right? So for a high school sports team, you can't perform at an elite level. You can't function together as a team unless you have that understanding that, that every member of the team is there. Everyone, it comes down to, you know, the commitment, the discipline, understanding what it means to be a part of that team and what it means to make individual sacrifices. And those sacrifices include foregoing, you know, that party on a Friday night when we've got an important game on Saturday.
How do you make those concepts get through to the kids? Are they receptive?
Kids are extremely receptive. I think that's one of the things that's been really surprising for us. Every group we've spoken with so far in Montana, every student that's been in front of us has told us they want this program. And what we've found, and you know, the kids are a lot smarter than we might give them credit for. What we find is it's really simple, as opposed to some of these other programs that you mentioned where you go in and you impose a set of rules on kids and you say, don't do this and don't do that and drugs are bad. That kind of goes in one ear and out the other. When you go in and you give kids information and how it directly applies to their performance and their ability to win games and state championships, and you let them know that it's up to them, it's their choice whether they want to take it. They choose it. They want it.
Why do they want it?
It's simple. If you give a choice, a kid to be awesome, they're going to choose awesome. They're going to want to win championships.
Wanting and doing are two different things, especially if it requires changes in behavior. What makes you believe this works?
We've seen it work. So we know they want it because they tell us. We hear them tell us they want it, and then we see them do it. And so, you know, as an example, there's a school in Rhode Island that we're working with. We met them back in June, so less than a year ago, and we presented this information, and a group of six kids came up and said, we want this in our school. 6 weeks later, we went and visited their school, and these kids had put on fundraisers, they'd written a code, they'd written a creed, they'd made T-shirts with the creed, they were selling them, they were recruiting kids, and that was in August. We were back there again in November and spoke to them, and they had recruited the two rival schools from their district and brought all their student leaders, and they were all adopting this code, completely run by students.
If I hear you right, you're saying because they have done this on their own, they have taken the initiative, they are taking ownership, and you believe they will do it. Am I mistaken?
That's correct.
Anthony and Jason, I very much regret to say we're out of time, and I want to thank you so much for being with us on Home Ground. To our listeners, many thanks for being with us. We hope you'll join us next week. Home Ground is an independent production of Artemis Common Ground and does not necessarily reflect the views of this radio station. Post-production by Valtron Recording Studios. We welcome your ideas for new programs at www.homegroundradio.org. Home Ground is made possible by grants from the Liz Claiborne Art Ortenberg Foundation, Cinnabar Foundation, Humanities Montana, and the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication about issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans.